Is there a place in time where logic breaks down and wonderment begins? Could that be somewhere or sometime along an infinite line between the reasonable and the highly unlikely? Join us on a journey into the improbable.
Today's story, episode 277, Poisoned, part 2, read by Steve Peterson. Opening and closing theme by Matthew Erdman. Somewhere and sometime what you want may not be the right thing to do. If you haven't heard part 1 of Poisoned, please listen to our November 18th, 2023 episode.
As the shadowy form flew across my tiny office, I barely had time to react, only managing to dive in the general direction of my futon, hoping in my laziness that I hadn't rolled it up. The ghostly phantom changed direction at the last second, passing so close that I could smell a faint trail of cardamom and coffee as it swept out the door. Then my shoulder connected with the floor, complaining. The futon had been rolled up. Surprised by both my unprecedented tidiness and my intruder, I untangled myself, wobbled to my feet, and ran out into the hall. But all signs of my uninvited guest were gone, leaving only the building's asbestos-laden dust mote swirling in their wake. Feeling both angry and relieved, I returned to my office. I wasn't sure what I would have done if I had caught the intruder. Asked them nicely to stand there while I called the police? Physical restraint is not one of my skill sets. After switching the lights on and checking around, nothing appeared out of place except for an official-looking envelope that had taken up residence on the only open surface of my desk. It was illuminated by the blue glow of my terminal screen, which I distinctly remembered turning off when I left that morning. I pulled out my phone and opened the security app to see who had just exited the building. Instead of a list of entrance and exit videos, the thing threw up a payment request. I was overdue, but why would I pay? The stupid system hadn't stopped Marta Hetman or my latest visitor from entering the building. At least my piece of paper in the door frame had alerted me to the fact that someone had broken into my office, and it was free, unlike the exorbitant monthly subscription fee the building's management wants for their paltry security system. Feeling exhausted, I slumped onto my chair and picked up the envelope. It was from a debt collection agency and sported a delivery confirmation stamp on the front featuring photos of my office door and the envelope on my desk. I could charge them with break and enter, but their administrative AI would claim they had used a third-party delivery service and weren't responsible for its methods, so it would be pointless. I was about to toss the envelope into the garbage when I noticed something had been felt markered on the back. It was an IP address. Intrigued, I placed it backside up in front of my terminal and logged on, pulling up the machine's recent history. There were dozens of failed attempts to guess my password using variations of my company name and the names of popular movies. It was a surprisingly old-school dictionary attack, something few people use these days, making me feel the perp was older. Hiding my identity and location through a Tor browser and VPN, I typed in the IP address from the back of the envelope and ended up on a dark web forum for corporate whistleblowers. These days, if you are foolish enough to leak bad stuff about a company, you need to cover your tracks. Even with my basic precautions, I didn't want to go rummaging about in that forum from my home terminal. The next day, I took my noon-hour break from the exchange in a random spot at Sunset Beach along the new seawall, which protected the exclusive Ocean View condo towers from the rising waters. On my way there, I had picked up a no-name burner tablet from a small backstreet vendor, which still accepted cash under the table if you knew how to ask. The single-use device couldn't be attached to a username, so it was just what I needed if I was going to blunder through a dark web whistleblower forum infested with all the latest corporate tracking tech. Only fools, the desperate or the fearless, frequent those places without industrial-strength identity protection. It didn't take long to hit pay dirt. Mixed in with the usual vitriol, I found a thread on Larissa's faulty face recognition system, which included a list of the people who had been part of the failed class action suit. One name on that list immediately jumped out, Mars Mueller. I'm not one to look a gift horse in the mouth, but why did my uninvited guest want me to find this? I felt like someone was leading me around, and I didn't like that. Throwing the burner tablet in a trash bin, I got up and started back to the exchange. One of the numerous street urchins hovering nearby like hungry seagulls swooped in and fished my discarded device out of the bin. It still had unused prepaid time, so the kid looked excited and stuffed it into an oversized pocket. I wished them luck. Some private security goon would soon appear looking for its user. Later that day, I met Marta at a coffee cart consisting of a converted ice cream trike with an umbrella duct taped to its side. She had chosen the cart because it wasn't trendy, so finding a quiet bench to talk wasn't hard. "Mars Mueller," I began. "He was involved in a class action suit against Larissa. Did you know that when you hired him?" Marta gave me the kind of dismissive look which said it was a stupid question. "Other than you, I don't get involved in HR decisions," she snapped. "So, what are you thinking?" "Mars had a reason to go after Larissa," I explained. "Maybe his goal was to get the exchange to terminate their contract, or get them bad press to tank their stocks." "But why now?" Marta asked. "Why not some other time, like during last year's bear market?" "If his goal was to inflict damage, that would have been the time to do it." She was right. I hadn't considered that. Why now? "I don't want you to say anything to Mars or anyone else," Marta directed. "How'd you find the list?" "Persistence and skill," I lied. I wasn't about to admit that I had gotten an anonymous tip. "Always make the client think you're working hard for your money. That's one of my primary business rules. I just want to make it clear that we're not going to the authorities with this," Marta emphasized. "So what do you intend to do?" I asked. "Buy Mars off or something?" I didn't want to guess what the or something could be. "You know that Mars isn't the problem. It's Larissa's system's reliance on public trading data. Anyone who discovers that can do this again." "As you say, if anyone discovers," Marta made air quotes, "what data repository is being used. But we're going to make sure that doesn't happen." "Right, Mr. Cipher. That information is proprietary, and your contract prohibits you from revealing anything about this case. Need I say any more?" she said in a threatening tone, then changed the subject. "I'm prepared to triple your daily rate if you can prove beyond a doubt that Mars poisoned the data. Also, there's a very generous bonus if this whole affair never sees the light of day. In the meantime, I'd encourage you to focus on getting the evidence and nothing else. In other words, don't look into Larissa's facial recognition system. It's not our problem." Marta abruptly got up and departed, leaving a bad taste in my mouth. As I watched her disappear into the noon-hour crowd, for the first time, I saw her for who she really was, an ambitious graduate of some elite business school, laser-focused on getting to the top, not fixing things. It was clear she and the exchange wanted the problem papered over so their reputations wouldn't get tarnished. "I suppose I had always assumed being a PI was black and white. Someone paid you to find something or someone, then you moved on to the next gig, and that was it. But that wasn't the case here. I was being paid to treat the symptom and ignore a cause which had implications far beyond the case." For a brief moment, I considered walking away from the job, but three times my daily rate plus a bonus pulled me back from the brink. If it came to a choice between living on the street and compromising my morals, I'd rather be warm and fed while I dealt with my ethical guilt. Finding the evidence, tying Mars to the data poisoning, or even proving that it had been a case of poisoning at all, was harder than I expected. The problem was the public market information repositories. They are continually updated and overwritten, and I had no way to roll them back to the state they were in when the exchange's AI investment system presumably ingested the poisoned data before going berserk and crashing the market. When it was turned on again to investigate the problem, the AI had simply consumed the current public information and self-corrected, leaving no trace. I knew it would have been hard to nail Mars, even if I had access to the poisoned data. It only took a few mislabeled trades slipped into the training set to affect the AI's behavior in a specific situation, changing a decision from risky to ludicrous, and the AI wouldn't know the difference. But there was no way to prove it using the data at hand, which left me only one choice. Mars was surprised I had invited him out for a drink after work under the auspices of getting to know my fellow workers, few of us that there were. We ended up at a small bar near the train stop closest to the office. Mars lived a 5-minute walk away, which made me wonder how much the exchange was paying him. Even when Cipher Systems had been at the top of its game, I couldn't afford the premium to live in the downtown area. "How long have you been working at the exchange?" I asked after we had settled into a corner booth and ordered drinks. 3 years next month," Mars said, avoiding my eyes. "I think George started 5 years ago. Anyway, he was there when I started. And you, what's your story?" I told Mars I was a freelance analyst, mostly unemployed over the last few years, that I had done a stint at the exchange long ago before they had turned their infrastructure over to AIs. That appeared to answer all his questions, leaving us staring at each other in awkward silence until the waiter arrived with our drinks. Seeing no point in being subtle, I dived right in. "Ever heard of a company called Larissa AI Solutions?" I asked, casually taking a sip of my drink. Mars stiffened and his lips pressed into a thin line. He didn't need to say anything. I had hit a pain point.
"Ah, why?" he stuttered.
"It's the company that developed the AI which caused the crash." All the color drained from his face. "Ever heard of them?" I asked again. He started to lift his glass, his hand visibly beginning to shake so hard he had to put it down. "I saw your name on a list," I added, and Mars almost collapsed into his drink. He looked around anxiously, then leaned in as close as he could. "Who are you? Did they hire you to see if I would break my NDA?" he quizzed, adding, "I don't know anything. What list are you talking about?" "Really?" I said sarcastically. "You don't remember the list of people. That includes you who sued Larissa over the inaccuracy of their AI that led to false arrests. A lot of people were convicted and went to prison. Some of them even died in there before the company was forced to admit their facial recognition system had made mistakes." Despite the AC, a bead of sweat began to trickle down Mars's forehead. The man sat there like a statue, as if moving a finger would be an admission. But guilt was flowing from every pore in his body. Sensing victory, I swooped in for the kill. "Was it your friend or maybe a close family member who got put away for doing nothing? I would be angry, too, when the whole affair got buried by that out-of-court settlement." "I understand. Where's the justice in that? Their CEO probably got a bonus for sweeping it under the rug while someone close to you rotted in prison. And what better way to get back at them than sabotaging one of their products? What were you hoping for? That the exchange would terminate them, or even better, drag them through another messy scandal that this time they would never be able to recover from?" Mars's reaction wasn't what I was expecting. He relaxed, deflating into his seat. "So you're only investigating the crash, and you think I was the one who hacked the trading AI to get back at Larissa?" Mars paused to take a long drink. "Why would I jeopardize the best thing that ever happened to me?" My jaw must have hit the table because Mars smiled. "You'll have signed a non-disclosure agreement if you're investigating the crash. Am I correct?" he asked. I nodded, and Mars went on to tell me that he had been falsely convicted of a crime by Larissa's AI. In compensation for his silence and walking away from the class action suit, the company gave him a hefty buyout and found him a job at the exchange. However, his buyout payments were tied to Larissa's continued good health. Mars had no reason to poison the data and every incentive to prevent what had happened. I was back to square one, and that was, of course, when the earbuds Marta insisted on using to communicate vibrated. I discreetly took one out and popped it in my ear.
"I'll need results by the end of the day tomorrow," she curtly informed me. "There's a board meeting, and they want this wrapped up before they make their quarterly report."
The signal abruptly cut off, and I suddenly saw myself living on the street. I was exhausted, angry, and desperate as I dragged myself into the exchange office the following day. A night of scouring the dark web, bribing and threatening when and where I had the leverage to do so, turned up nothing. Even an AI hacker I hired to break into Larissa and steal copies of the training records for the automated investment system got nothing useful. "You look like the cat's breakfast," George commented as I dragged myself past his cubicle. "Did you and Mars tie one on last night? How'd you..." No, it's a small office, Will, in case you haven't noticed. George stopped what he was doing and grinned insincerely at me. I had almost forgotten George even existed. Unlike Mars, he kept to himself, so much so that he disappeared into the empty cubicle farm like an unoccupied office chair. Looks like you could use a coffee, he offered with unexpected charity and poured a cup from a thermos. The smell of coffee and cardamom wafted into the air, causing my mind to do a double take. That aroma is very distinctive, I noted, trying to keep surprise and recognition out of my voice. George nodded. It's not as popular as it used to be, but it's the only coffee I drink. And you drink a lot of coffee, don't you? So you inadvertently smell of cardamom like a cologne, I suggested. Don't get me wrong. It's not unpleasant. Just something you don't easily forget when you encounter it in an unexpected place. Sweetener? He offered, ignoring my comment. I nodded, and he squeezed a bit of honey-like syrup into the coffee from an unlabeled container, stirred it, and then handed the concoction to me. The aroma was intoxicating. I hadn't bothered to get my usual morning caffeine jolt, so I took a big gulp. George watched me drink with interest. You obviously needed that. I guess I don't even smell the cardamom anymore, he admitted, adding, And that was my strategic mistake, wasn't it? His expression suddenly darkened, and the air between us became electric. For an instant, his muscles tensed, as if he was going to leap over the cubicle wall at me. Instead, he slumped back into his chair, deflated. I was in your office the other day, he admitted. So you're the one who broke in. The door was already open, George explained. I wanted to find something on your computer to confirm the exchange hired you to investigate the crash. And if you were, I was going to plant a clue that would lead you to the class action lawsuit and out-of-court settlement, hoping you'd take that information to the exchange and they'd go public about Larissa. But when you showed up, I panicked, scribbled down an address on an envelope for you to discover, then bailed before you turned the lights on. I almost missed it, I admitted. I tend to throw notices from collection agencies out. Without any prompting, George launched into an explanation of how Larissa's AI had falsely convicted his sister and how she had died in prison before her name could be cleared. The family had been given a large payout to keep quiet, but George had never been able to put her death behind him. A few days before the collapse, he had accidentally discovered that Larissa had developed one of the exchange's investment systems and decided to poison it, hoping the resulting fallout would take Larissa down. But instead of going to the authorities and going public, they hired you, George's expression soured. At least that is what I thought George was saying. My mind was suddenly getting thick, and it was hard to think. George's voice seemed to be getting further away, and my legs had turned to rubber. I was falling, but before I hit the floor, blackness closed in around me. Glad to see you back. I opened my eyes to blurry shadows against a bright white antiseptic ceiling. The toxicology report says it was just a strong sedative. My vision began to focus. I wasn't in a hospital. It was too upscale for that. Plus, without private health insurance, I would have been sharing the room with a dozen other patients. Have some water, Marta suggested. A nurse's aide, dressed in a uniform emblazoned with an elite private clinic logo, helped prop me up and handed me a plastic glass. I accepted it, experimentally taking a sip while the cotton in my head cleared. How long? I managed to ask. About 12 hours. It was George, wasn't it? Marta stated flatly. I nodded. He's long gone, she explained. Mars found you on the floor beside George's cubicle at the end of the day. The sweetener in the coffee was drugged. I should have known. George didn't put any in his own, I moaned. The room began to spin as I tried to prop myself up on my elbow, gave up, and flopped back down on the bed. He has a good half-day head start, Marta said, looking disgruntled. I've hired an AI tracking service to find him. No one can completely disappear. We'll get to him eventually. It isn't exactly the outcome I had in mind, but you did manage to flush out the culprit before the board meeting. So technically you've completed your contract. There's some paperwork you'll need to sign to get paid. The exchange will cover the cost of this room until the end of the day. After that, you're on your own. Good day, Mr. Cipher. Marta smiled insincerely, dropped an envelope on my bed, and left.
The next day, I sat at my desk, distractedly watching the ever-present delivery drones reflected off the dilapidated facade across the street. Only a few hours ago, there was no way I could imagine ever affording anything those little machines were carrying. However, if I chose to play along, I might even have enough money to move to a better part of town and buy a modest office condo. Did I want the money bad enough to live with the questions that refused to leave my mind? They hadn't found George yet, and I had no idea what they would do with him. But George wasn't the underlying problem. They were also the victims of Larissa's faulty facial recognition system, and there would be future victims unless the company's AI systems were fixed. The exchange and Larissa were only interested in ensuring the whole affair disappeared as if it never happened. I glanced down at the legal documents Marta had given me to sign. It was an extremely generous offer, enough that I probably wouldn't have to worry about money again as long as I kept my mouth shut. I sighed heavily, set down the pen I had been twirling in my fingers, and looked out my window again. Maybe the view wasn't so bad after all.
You can help us continue creating original content twice a month by either heading over to ko-fi.com/makeshiftstories and making a one-time donation, or becoming an ongoing supporter at patreon.com/makeshiftstories. Makeshift Stories is released around the beginning and middle of the month. This month's story was written by Alan V. Hare and read by Steve Peterson. Opening and closing themes were composed and recorded by Matthew Erdman. Audio production and editing by Makeshift Studios. If you'd like to connect with us, please send an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. Links to both are in the show notes. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution, no derivative license, which means you are free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.